Community and Parliament. So good morning to Mr. Khan and Dr. Masoja. I don't know who's leading the delegation of DTIC.
Chairperson, we do realize that you've got to leave urgently to another meeting dealing with the floods in KwaZulu-Natal. Should we not just reverse, do the minutes and the committee matters in-house first and then deal with the presentation?
Oh, okay. Yes, and that's what I was going to request. I just wanted to deal with the greetings and all that. But also wanted to find out who is there leading the delegation. I know that the program that we'll be dealing with is led by Dr. Masoja. But I also wanted to check if she's also leading the delegation. Over to you, Dr. Masoja. I see your hand is up.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. The person who's leading the delegation is our Acting DG, Mr. Shabir Khan. I will be doing the presentation, but he's leading us. Thank you.
Oh, okay. No, thank you so much. Because the reason I'm asking, I thought that we have not been formally informed who's the, because the last time we knew it was a, there was an Acting DG, so I don't know. I thought that last week, Mr. Khan was representing the acting DG, so it played out that he is the acting DG. So I just wanted to clarify that aspect. But what we're going to do now, Honorable Mama, let me also just indicate that the reason we're starting our meeting at 9 is that I am one of the members that have been appointed to the ad hoc committee on floods that are focusing on the damage that has been caused by floods and the recovery processes in KZN, parts of Eastern Cape, parts of Northwest. But there is an indication that there are also parts of Northern Cape, but it has not been formally, formally part of the motion that went to both houses, something that is still have to be processed. So far, it's only the three provinces until officially Northern Cape is included. So what happened is that now the team will be going to the Eastern Cape today, but the challenge is that there's only one flight now because the British Airways is grounded voluntarily ahead. So there's only one flight that leaves Cape Town at 10 past one. So I will be leaving the platform at 11:15 because the driver is coming to fetch me at 11. So I had requested that we then start at 9. And then I will then ask Honorable Damo to continue chairing the meeting. Perhaps by the time we have questions to the department, I may be gone, so request the Honorable Tango to take over the chair. So I have suggested that we then, because we have a number of a set of minutes that have not been able to adopt, that we start with the minutes and then the report of employment and labor, because next week on the 15th we'll be debating the employment and labor budget vote. Once we're done with that, then we'll ask then Mr. Khan to make opening remarks, and then Dr. Masocha will then do the presentation. Are there any apologies, Ms. Mandia?
Yes, morning, Chair. Chair, from members, but from the side of members, we've got standing apologies from Honourable Lansman and Honourable Matavula. And then from the department side, we've got an apology from the minister who's unable to attend.
Okay. Thanks so much. Okay. Can we then start, I don't know how many set of minutes we have.
It's quite a few, Chair. I will ask, I think Enrico, you could just ask Enrico to just start by.
It's just 22nd of March, and we're in June. Okay. Can you just scroll them up, down, or up? Okay, so that you can see who was present. That was too fast. Okay, all right, okay. Thank you, Ms. Pazde. Are there any corrections, honorable members, or any omissions? If not, can we have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes of the 22nd of March? Honorable Moima.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes and to reflect on what transpired on the 23rd of March.
Thank you very much. And a seconder, Honorable Musoli.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. I second the minutes of the 2nd of March. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Well, thank you very much. Okay, any counter view? Not. Can we, the next minutes, set of minutes? Um, minutes of the 19th of April. Are there any corrections or omissions in the minutes of the 19th of April? Not. Can we then have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes?
I move adoption of the minutes, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Apleni?
I second the move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Apleni. Is there any counter view? Not. Thank you very much. Mr. Pazna, can you write another set of minutes, 4th of May? Sorry, my microphone was off. Are there any corrections or omissions in the minutes of the 4th of May? If not, can we have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes of the 4th of May? Those who are present.
I move for the adoption, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Any seconder? Do we have a seconder for the minutes of the 4th of May? Can you hear me, honorable members?
I second the...
Oh, you second. Thank you very much, Honorable Apleni. Mr. Pazia, can you flight the next set of minutes? Scroll down. Okay. Are there any corrections? Are there any omissions? If not, can we have a mover, the seconder, for the adoption of the minutes of the 10th of May?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Mshodi, I move for adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mshodi. Is there any seconder?
I second the adoption, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, and also thanks to Honorable. I saw the hand of Honorable Aplin. Okay. Any counter motion? Not. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. The next step, Mr. Pazia. The minutes of the 17th of May. Any corrections or omissions? If not, can we have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes of the 17th of May? Honorable Mshodi.
Thank you, Chair. I move for adoption of the minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And a seconder?
I'll second your person.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Bazia? Minutes of the 18th of May. Very much. And we have a second move by the second if there are no corrections or omissions.
I so move, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tambo. Any seconder?
I second, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
I second, Chairperson.
Yes, I. Thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much, Omar Khan. Mr. Bazia. May 24th. Dealing with the CMA. Okay, thank you very much. Are there any corrections or omissions? Okay. have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes of the 24th of May.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Mshodi, I move for adoption of the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any seconder?
I second, Honorable Chairperson, Mamarakhane.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mamarakhane. Any counter view? Not. Okay. Mr. Bazia, I think we're going to the last set of minutes, which was the 31st of May, which was last week. Okay, are there any corrections and omissions? If not, can we have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes of the 31st of May?
Honorable Mushodi, I move for adoption of the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any seconder?
I'll second the chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dango. Any counter motion? Not. That was the last set of the minutes, Honorable members. We will now go to the report of employment and labor on the APPs that we presented. You can scroll down, Mr. Bazia. Okay. Are there any comments on the report, corrections, omissions? Okay. Seems like this one, honorable members, because it's a report that is in terms of section 77. So we will deal with them in terms of rule 155, which I would read as follows. It says, except when a question is decided, business may proceed irrespective of the number of members present. Two, when a question that does not fall under section 75 of the Constitution is to be decided, A, committee members representing at least 5 provinces or 6 provinces in the case of constitutional amendments must be present. And B, the question is decided by the supporting vote of at least 5 provinces or 6 provinces in the case of constitutional amendment. When a question is to be decided in terms of section 75 of the Constitution, which is this one, A, the question may be decided only if a majority of the permanent members of the committee is present. The question is decided by the majority of the vote cast. If there is an equal number of votes on each side of a question, the chairperson must cast a deciding vote in addition to a vote as an ordinary member. So therefore, what we're going to be doing, I will first ask those that are voting in favor to raise their hands on the chat. But if your device is unable to raise a hand, you can shout whether you're voting yes or no. Then after that, we'll lower our hands, those that are voting in favor, and we ask those who are voting against, and they raise their hands. After that, they lower their hands, and then we ask those who are abstaining. Can we then start, I don't know if you have a question, the hand of Honorable Dang and Honorable Mamarakhan. Honorable Mamarakhan.
I was raising my hand to vote in favor, Chair.
Recording in progress.
Oh, okay. All right. Can I then formally ask those who are moving for the adoption of the report to raise their hands on the chat? Or if your device is not working, you can then shout. And then we'll ask Ms. Mattia to count the number of votes. Honorable Moimang on the platform?
Yes, he is, Chair.
Okay. Looks like we're unable to get the 5 provinces, as far as I can see, which will be the majority. You know, sometimes the people are connecting in too many meetings. Can we check if Honorable maybe is connected on another meeting? I don't know. Want to assume?
I'm calling him, Chair. I think he's on another call.
And an update, is my dear.
Chair, I tried calling him. His line is busy, and I sent him a message as well.
Oh, okay. I think that let's for now check lower our hands and then check those who are voting against. Let's lower our hand. Those who are voting against. Okay. Okay. There are three. That's, and then those, we can lower your hands. Can lower your hands, please. Those who are voting against. Those who are abstaining. Okay. I don't know if there's a anyone from the procedural office to just clarify this procedure. I don't know if Shamara is with us. Yeah.
She's not on the platform, Chi. She's not on the platform, but let me just touch base with her.
Okay. But now on this one we're voting as individuals, not as provinces. So that's why then there should be some procedural advice on it. Otherwise we will have to defer the voting to the next meeting.
Honourable Chair, if I may, I think that would be the wise thing to do because we cannot wait until everybody's on the platform. Thank you.
Yes. All right. Let's agree that then we defer it to the next meeting, which will be on the 14th, and then we then ask Mr. Khan to make opening remarks, and then we hand over to Dr. Masoja. I see the hand of Honorable Lord.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to find out, we have been pushing this now. When are we moving back to in-person meetings? The committee rooms and the Marks building is in a working condition. I know that they're looking at the getting just the sound system so sorted in the NCOP, but at some stage we need to start getting that back in place and in order as well.
Okay. Well, I'm not really sure, Honorable Lont. I know Honorable Tim is connected. He raised this question in the Joint Standing Committee on Financial Management of Parliament. As you correctly say, I think the issues were more technical that preventing us. They are around these issues of microphones and systems, communication systems. It looks like because we are also going for constituent period, I think our last day will be on the 24th of June. I can assume that then we're coming back on the 1st of August. I assume that maybe during the period of July. There was a just my assumption, those things will would have been sorted out by then. Otherwise, the chamber is fine, except that those issues. Maybe Honorable Tim can come and then followed by Honorable Dango. Honorable Tim.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue with the speakers was in the house, or the microphones was in the house, if you remember.
Yes.
There'd been a power surge. But what Honorable Lont refers to is the meeting rooms in the Marks building.
Oh, yes.
So I just want to implore you as chair of this committee, and obviously Honorable Moyimang as well, to advise the chief whips that, you know, Marks building is ready to go. And in any case, in those rooms, even if there is a problem with microphones, they are small enough that we can all hear each other around a small room. I understand the house would be problematic because the acoustics are not great without microphones. But I certainly think that the support Honorable Lunt in saying that we can go back to in-person meetings in the Marks building at the very least, and the various other buildings around the campus. Let's not confuse the house with community meetings. I'm sure you'll recall that. Thank you, Chair.
No, I recall that you raised that point. I remember you even talking about the exchange of business cards, and all that. Because we were focusing on the issue of oversight, that it doesn't necessarily mean just meeting only, but also some communication after the meetings. We will make a follow-up, but I think in the issue of the committee rooms, it will be first come, first serve, because most of the committee rooms were in the building that got burnt. There are fewer at Marks building. It will be the question of first come, first serve. But we will make a follow-up, as you indicated. Honorable Dango?
Chairperson, then you must be first. Then you must be first.
Chairperson, in the meeting of WIPS, the other issue that was raised around Marks building was the question of broadcasting, that the broadcasting facilities were not up to scratch, and they needed to look at that. But I suppose all of the technical issues can be sorted out as soon as possible. We were supposed to have had a report back at the end of this week as to the resolution of all the technical issues, and then a decision must be made as to when we come back physically, all of us in the NCOP, to Cape Town.
Thank you so much, Honorable Dam. At this stage, can I then allow Mr. Khan to make opening remarks, and then you will then give over to Dr. Masoja to make a presentation, and then after that members will then ask questions. But I will also hand over to Honorable Dango. Thank you very much. Mr. Khan.
Greetings, Honorable Chairperson, members of the Select Committee, staff of the Select Committee, colleagues. As requested by the Select Committee this morning, we will be doing a presentation that covers the work of the corporate, the consumer and corporate regulatory branch. Chairperson, within the broad mandate of the department, the consumer and corporate regulatory branch plays a very important role in the setting and the development of a number of pieces of policies, legislation. And the key objective is to provide a business regulatory environment that is fair, that is competitive, and that provides for efficient markets as well. Chair, in our delegation this morning, we've got Dr. Evelyn Masocha, who is the Deputy Director General, who will be leading the presentation. We also have Ms. Sandile Brown, who is the Chief Director within the CCRB branch. We've also got Ms. Clementine Makapir, who is also an acting chief director in the branch. Mr. Masala Maubelo, who is an acting director, Ms. Priya Ramduni, who is a chief director in the branch. We also do have Ms. Nontomi Matumela, who is the acting chief operating officer, as well as Ms. Saroj Naidu. Chairperson, we've also extended an invite to a number of our regulatory entities that reports directly into the CCRB branch. Chair, on the call this morning, we have Ms. Monica Ledingwane, who is representing the company's tribunal. We've also got Mr. Vanessan Woodley, who is representing the National Consumer Tribunal. We've got Ms. Ntupang Maholeho, as well as Mr. Bongani Kweke from the National Credit Regulator. We've got Ms. Caroline Kongwa representing the National Gambling Board, Mr. Kreet Masheho representing the National Lotteries Commission, Ms. Tezi Mabuza, as well as Ms. Umeza Mslungu representing the National Consumer Commission. And lastly, we do have Ms. Batebile Kapumha, who is representing the company's Intellectual Property Commission. Chair, without much further ado, Chair, I'll then hand over to, with your permission, hand over to Dr. Masocha to take us through the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. Good morning to the Select Committee staff, to all the DTIC officials, and also to the entities that Mr. Khan has introduced. Chair, I will be presenting the consumer and corporate regulation mandate. We are program 5 of the DTIC programs, and we do focus on regulations, policies, to address issues that impact on the larger population of South Africa in the respective areas that we do address as a branch. So I want to say thank you for this opportunity to present for the department, and also to showcase or talk to the work of the department. So we have been invited to present about the program 5, and we will be talking to who we are in terms of the context and where we are placed in the regulatory framework. So our vision as a branch is to lead in consumer and corporate regulation that impacts positively on the South African economy. And our purpose is to develop and implement coherent, predictable, and transparent regulatory solutions that facilitate easy access to redress and efficient regulation for economic citizens, and to promote competitive, fair, and efficient markets, as the acting DG has indicated. So we develop policies, laws, and regulatory frameworks, regulations, guidelines, and so on. So we look at areas in the lotteries, gambling, liquor, companies, intellectual property, credit, and consumer protection. And we also have functions that have got concurrent national and provincial competency in the areas of gambling, liquor, and consumer protection. And in terms of liquor, we do a lot of work that addresses coordination with provinces, even though our mandate is on the macro manufacturing and distribution. We don't do retail and micro manufacturing, but we ensure that there is integration of policy, there is integration in terms of our work and coordination from enforcement to policy and our legislative framework. We also work very closely with national departments such as agriculture, forestry and fisheries, and the South African Police Services on enforcement matters. Our objective is to increase access to economic opportunities for small businesses and previously disadvantaged citizens. We also aim to develop an efficient regulation to reduce the regulatory burden on business and increase confidence and certainty in the South African business regulation. We aim to create a business regulatory environment that promotes competitive, fair, and efficient markets to provide access to redress for economic citizens, to increase confidence in the markets. Also to promote awareness of rights, duties, responsibilities, to increase activism and public participation. And our work centers a lot around public participation, stakeholder engagement, education and awareness, public awareness, and also to share and exchange regulatory experiences with partners nationally and internationally to promote simple, appropriate, and more effective regulatory solutions. Our entities also play an important role in working closely with other regulators in other countries, including in the continent. I'm not going to read into all the legislation that is in the slide, but this was just to give the committee an overview of the types of laws that we administer as a branch. So I'll start with the Consumer Protection Act. There's the National Credit Act, the Liquor Act, the Lotteries Act, National Gambling Act, and Companies Act, and various intellectual property related legislation, such as the Copyright Act, Performance Protection Act, Patents Act. So these are our legislative framework. They include policies that were adopted by cabinet. They include norms and standards, including codes. We have some codes that were accredited by the minister in the Consumer Protection Act in terms of that act. So these are broadly this is our legislative framework in broad terms. The National Gambling Act had an amendment act in 2008 focusing on interactive gambling. And this law was signed into law, but it has not come into effect. So I wanted to highlight that so that the select committee is aware. Also, the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act of 2013 was one of the laws that was passed into law for the branch, but it did not come into effect. There are reasons, but it was just to highlight that they are the two that have not been put into force. In terms of the structure of the branch, it is divided into six chief directorates led by the DDG role, and we have an area that focuses on operational matters that looks at all the operations of the branch. Then we have the core that addresses the issues of the regulatory policy and legislation. This is where all the legislation, policies, notices, guidelines, norms, and standards are set, and then supported by the legislative drafting chief directorate that deals with the drafting of the branch. And also they support other legislation in the department. And the National Liquor Authority is our internal regulator that addresses issues of the Liquor Act, enforcement, and administration. Then to support the legislative processes, we have the Chief Directorate for Monitoring, Evaluation, and Socioeconomic Impact Assessments. This is where we deal with our impact assessments, our key researches around impact assessments, and the socioeconomic impact systems of the presidency are coordinated for the different legislation through this unit. Our research unit is our glue as well, because we are focusing on evidence-based policy making. So we use this unit quite substantively to deal with issues of research, to inform the various tools and instruments that we come up with in terms of the legislative processes to respond to the challenges in the society, in the country. I will start with the National Lotteries regulatory overview. On this slide is just to highlight the regulatory framework of the National Lottery at a high level. to indicate that we do administer the national lotteries through the Lotteries Act of 1997, and that we do this work in collaboration, in conjunction with our regulator, the National Lotteries Commission. Their mandate centers around applications and providing funding, good cost funding, to non-governmental organizations, non-profit organizations, non-profit companies. This funding is for good cause. It goes to charities, sports organizations, it goes into the arts, and there are legislated allocations for this funding. The funding is divided into two types, the type of funding that is proactive, and then the normal funding that is proactive funding type of funding is research based and need based, and also the other types of funding. And then we have the distributing agencies that also adjudicate, administer, evaluate the applications that they receive. Then we have an operator, Ituba, that is who has a license, who's an operator that is responsible for ensuring that license is implemented effectively, operating the national lottery in the country. And they also have there's a participation trust that also caters to the issues around the lottery's funding, and the fund of the National Lotteries Distribution Trust Fund that holds this funding that goes into good causes. So the NLC monitors these activities through the license with the operator. So the minister also plays a very important role as the administrator of this function. So this is the broad picture of the whole system around the regulatory framework of the National Lottery. And on this slide is just to indicate what the legislation, the Amendment Act, and the National Lotteries Act, the Lotteries Act provides. So this act provides for the efficient processing of applications. It provides for the systems for the open call of applications and the funding, multi-year funding, for the proactive funding based on informed research, for the appointment of the distributing agencies that are full-time, and also the role of the NLC in terms of how they manage the National Lotteries Distribution Trust Fund, and how to regulate the national lottery as well as other lotteries, including society lotteries, to raise funds and promotional competitions. Also providing for the accountability of distributing agencies to both Minister and the National Lotteries Commission Board, and the role of other role players, the conduits in the participation around the lotteries. And the Amendment Act also dealt with the removal of the Reconstruction and Development Program. There was an allocation that was there before on the RDP. And it also provides an option that allows for the operation of the National Lottery by an organ of state. So it is just to create, it created that avenue just in case it's something that government in future can look into. And in terms of the development, where are we on the lotteries legislative framework? We finalized the regulatory impact assessment in the previous financial year, and the aim of it was to look at certain provisions in the Act to check where are the gaps and where are the areas that requires further policy discussion, that requires review. Ideally, every 5 years, a legislation has to be assessed, reviewed, check where there are gaps, where implementation issues, where and challenges and so on for further improvement. So this is the regulatory impact assessment study was playing that role. And going forward, we'll be working with the NLC closely to address the recommendations from that RIA, and we will then use those to inform the next policy positions on the Act in terms of the legislative process. Then we move to the National Gambling Legislative Framework. So the national with the National Gambling Legislative Framework, on this slide is just to highlight the the framework in general, like where we are placed. So we have the National Gambling Act and we have provincial acts that are dealt with by the provincial gambling boards of the nine provinces. And our role is oversight and also ensuring that there's harmonization, licensing and regulation, other regulation is addressed in the provinces. And we also have a platform provided for in the Act, the National Gambling Policy Council, that ensures that cooperative government between provinces and national, between the minister and the MECs. On this slide, I will just talk briefly in terms of what the National Gambling Act provides. It does provide for the different modes of gambling, from casinos, bingo, limited payout machines, racing. Racing is in the Act, we have racing, although it does talk to an example of horse racing and sports betting. And the National Gambling Board was established through the 1996 Act. And the National Gambling Policy Council, I just mentioned in the previous slide, is provided for in the National Gambling Act of 2004. What it provides for is coordination of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence over matters relating to the modes of gambling I mentioned just briefly. And also it provides for the establishment of certain uniform norms and standards applicable to national and provincial regulation and licensing of certain gambling activities. It provides for the establishment and maintenance of a national central electronic monitoring system, which is capable of detecting and monitoring significant events associated with limited payout machines. Also, it provides for the creation of additional uniform norms and standards applicable throughout the Republic. So broadly, this is what the Act for Gambling provides for. The recent developments on the Gambling Act is that the Act went through the parliamentary processes in 2018. It was introduced into Parliament in 2018 in August. It underwent the processes until March 2019. It went through both houses, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. It provided for one of the major amendments it provided for was the establishment of the National Gambling Regulator to be led by a CEO as an accounting authority. And other amendments highlighted there include to provide for the procedure for forfeiting of unlawful winnings. It was also meant to assist the National Gambling Policy Council to make decisions because there have been challenges of quorums and meetings will come over a number of years where there were not sufficient number of MECs available to make certain decisions. And it also extended the National Central Electronic Monitoring System to other modes of gambling. Currently, it's only limited to limited payout machines. And to also strengthen the inspectorate powers of the National Gambling Board, because there are challenges currently that requires that the National Gambling Board has to intervene. However, because of the provincial competencies and the provincial issues of concurrent jurisdiction and their jurisdiction, there are certain things that the regulator cannot do without having access to provinces via the regulator. So that this was just to ensure more protection for the punters and a regulatory framework that is more secured for their players. And there was a comprehensive bill that was developed. However, because of the timing of the introduction into Parliament, it was reduced significantly. So there are other amendments that were not brought forward that are still pending. The National Gambling Board had a board, like similar to the National Lotteries Commission that has a board. But that board was then terminated in 2014. And then the National Gambling Board was placed under administration and headed by an administrator. So that's what made the amendments urgent from a corporate governance point of view. So when the bill left in 2019 and it was then resuscitated or revived, it was not, in terms of its finality, it did not receive sufficient support from the majority of provinces. So because it was not voted for by the majority, then there was that challenge of its status. So currently, the the bill is in, it was referred to mediation, that the referral took place in December of 2021. So in the mandate there, I just highlighted the status of how the different provinces voted. So I'll move from this slide then, Chair, to the next one on the national liquor. So in terms of the national liquor, we are governed by the Liquor Act 59 of 2003 that provides for the reduction of the socioeconomic costs of alcohol abuse. It also establishes norms and standards in order to maintain economic unity within the liquor industry. This act provides for essential national standards and minimum standards required for the rendering of services. It provides for measures to promote cooperative government in the area of liquor regulation, and it addresses the issue of transformation in the liquor industry. So this is the similar picture provided for gambling, but for liquor, this is to indicate that we have the provincial and the national mandate, and it's concurrent, but we focus on the macro manufacturing and the distribution of liquor. Provinces prioritizes micro manufacturing and retail. And then we also have a National Liquor Policy Council that deals with issues of cooperative government, collaborative decision making, norms and standards set between the regulators. And from the National Liquor Authority, we have a National Liquor Regulators Forum where provinces and the provincial liquor boards meet with the National Liquor Authority to engage on norms and standards enforcement issues. They do collaborative work on enforcement and so on. So I'll talk briefly on the role of the National Liquor Authority. So this is our regulator that regulates manufacturing and distribution. And it is a chief directorate within the branch. And it is seen and it is a regulator. It issues licenses for new applications, for renewals, for relocations. It also coordinates zoning-related certificates and so on with the relevant municipalities. It conducts inspections and police enforcement operations with other law enforcement agencies and provincial regulators on a regular basis. It has outreaches as well where they go and educate provinces on various issues. It conducts intergovernmental coordination and harmonization with the provincial liquor authorities through that forum I mentioned in the previous slide. They meet quarterly. It has an MOU or Memorandum of Understanding with various enforcement agencies. They include the South African Police Services, CIPC, SARS, the BBB Commission. And it does conduct inspections nationwide. And the enforcement support it receives from the other entities also assists a lot, because then it helps with reach to as many provinces as possible. Then in terms of the legislative framework, where we are, the developments, the Liquor Amendment Bill was finalized and published for public comment after cabinet approval in 2016. It went through the NEDLAC processes in 2017. It was presented to cabinet in 2018 in the cabinet committee, and then they raised certain issues. They included consultations with other ministers, also the certification of the bill. So because we had, as a branch, there were several bills in 2018 in parliament. There was credit, the National Credit Amendment Act, there was the copyright and the performance protection, there was the National Gambling Amendment Bill. There were several bills in the parliamentary program. This one was kept in abeyance pending after the elections to continue with the processes. And then we had that process of the elections, and then there was COVID. So during the COVID pandemic, what came about? If the chair and the honourable members recall, there were various issues that came up around liquor and the responses. There were restrictions also related to that. So we then realized as a department that the issue of liquor was very much bigger, and we looked at the bill at the time, and we looked at the response the bill provided, the Liquor Amendment Bill provided, and the situation. And we realized the situation was quite massive. And we started thinking about what else can be done. that's when the thinking came about to say, as a department, let's engage with other departments. Let's look at integration. Let's look at an intergovernmental approach to the situation to see what else can we bring forward collectively to address this issue such that there is an impact. So we started that engagement with other departments, national departments, in September of 2021. That process is still ongoing. We are still engaging to look at how we can strengthen our different legislative tools by different departments, including our own Liquor Amendment Bill, so that we, when we bring it forward, there is much impact. So currently we are in the process to review the liquor policy and the bill and to encourage the coordinated strategy of measures on liquor abuse in the country. And that process is underway. So this year we are looking at the policy options to see how much we can have a bigger impact. And we will be still coordinating and working closely with other departments. So we move to corporate law. In corporate law, our main legislation is the Companies Act of 2008. This act introduced measures such as business rescue provisions for the financially distressed companies with the aim to save jobs and promote economic growth. So it came into effect in May of 2011. And then there's a very important innovative measure that the act also brought forward, which is the social and ethics committees in boards. These were brought forward to ensure, to promote cooperative governance and socially responsible business practices. And also independent reviews were introduced to support small enterprises. These are related to auditing related issues. And then company registration was enhanced for the removal of burdensome regulatory framework. There were innovations in company registration and adoption of the reporting framework, such as the extensible business reporting language for financial reporting that was introduced. And then the Act then provided for or improved provisions for fundamental transactions of mergers and takeovers in the interest of minority shareholders. And so there were improvements in terms of corporate governance, and ensuring transparency in the regulatory system for the companies. In terms of the current legislative developments, we are currently reviewing the Companies Act. The Companies Amendment Bill was published for gazetting in October of 2021, which was following an extensive NEDLAC discussions and cabinet approval around September. So the bill addresses issues of disclosure. As members would know, there are challenges of issues of remuneration in the country, of the pay gaps, challenges of how low earning and the highest earning are treated in the companies. So the bill appeals for more disclosure around those issues of pay gaps. It also looks at how to combat money laundering issues, how to ensure that we apply or we comply with the international obligations to combat money laundering. So disclosure of shares and ownership in companies is one of the measures that the bill also introduces. And there are various amendments that talks to reducing red tape in the implementation of the Act. For example, the clarity provided on the notice of amendment of a memorandum of incorporation in terms of when does it take effect. Making provisions to ensure there's more transparency for access to company records. There are shares that are not allotted properly or regularly, so the correction of those shares, how to correct the allocation of shares that were not regularly provided for. So there are these measures that the bill introduces that strengthens the current issues around transparency, governance, and reducing red tape, including a clarity around the role of the chairperson of the tribunal, company's tribunal, and the chief operating officer. So these are some of the issues. And our plan is for the bill to be tabled in cabinet in this financial year, and hopefully also to be introduced into parliament, but to take it for the further consideration of cabinet. And there's another bill that we will be developing. It's on the representation of representation of workers in company boards or labor representation in company boards structures. This is not a unique framework. Other emerging countries developed countries have considered this. I think Germany is one of those countries. So it's one of the amendment bills that will also be developing around the corporate law space to ensure that there is a voice of the workers in terms of decision-making structures in boards. In terms of intellectual property, we administer the intellectual property related laws. Example is the Merchandise Marks Act, the Patents Act. And with the Merchandise Marks Act, we have more activities around it because the applications are made to the minister for use of certain marks for business and professional rationale. Also, for the use of the national flag, we do this work with the Department of Sports and Arts around the coordination of the decision making on the use of the South African flag. Also, designating certain events as protected events. And we dealt with several of them, some of them very high profile, like the 2010 Soccer World Cup, the 2009 British and Irish Lions Tour, and also the 2013 African Cup of Nations, as an example. And then we administer the Patent Examination Board internally. This is responsible for a curriculum with universities for the patent attorneys, develop accreditation of the patent patent professionals. So this is administered directly in the branch. And then in terms of the Copyright and Performance Protection Act, the acts are currently being reviewed. In the next slide, Chair, I just brought them in the slide, but then I will just speak it at high level in terms of where they are, reason being that these are currently being discussed in another committee. Currently, the National Assembly is busy with the remitted bills. They're called remitted bills because of the fact that the president did return them to the parliament. So the bills are currently being dealt with there, but they did go through the both houses of parliament. They went into the portfolio committee and then to the National Assembly and then to the NCOP. They were passed into law, and then there were challenges with them. Then they were returned to parliament, and currently the portfolio committee is looking at the reservations that were raised by the president. So this was just to show that there is work that is currently underway, and they did pass through this this committee before, and it's just to indicate that they are there, and they will be coming through this way should they pass through the National Assembly state. So I just added the slides for members to be aware, for members to see the content, but because they are being deliberated in the other house, I request that maybe we just note them, and if there are any questions, we will then talk to them, but then not to focus on them specifically, like the other slides that I have dealt with. So I will then move to the consumer protection. So in consumer protection, we have a legislative framework there as well, and regulators. The space has got many role players, from our regulators, which is the National Consumer Commission, the National Consumer Tribunal. Then there's also the provincial consumer protection offices. There's our ombudsman for the motor industry, the consumer goods and services. And then there are other statutory ombudsmen. But then there are those that I just mentioned that are accredited by the Consumer Protection Act. Then there's the role of the courts in handling matters of unfair practices for consumers, and other structures like civil society and other active organizations that deals with issues of consumer protection in the country. So this is also an area of concurrent jurisdiction, and the role of the provinces come in very strongly here as well. So we participate in the Consumer Protection Forum, And this is a structure that was also formed in the spirit of cooperation and upholding intergovernmental relations between the institutions that are in the consumer protection space. The National Consumer Commission spearheads this platform with the 9 provincial offices at consumer bodies. Also, we are involved in that. It includes the National Department of Tourism, the Motor Industry Ombudsman, the Consumer Goods and Service Ombuds. So this structure basically is just to ensure that there is coordination, there is integration in terms of consumer protection in the country with the regulators. So examples of collaborative efforts that we can share is the effort for the World Consumer Rights Day that was celebrated in March this year. It's a yearly event. And in this yearly platform, they have joined an enforcement and national provincial education awareness efforts. So this is mainly to deal with education, enforcement, compliance, and sharing of knowledge and information between them, different role players. So the National Consumer Protection Act provides for the national norms for consumer protection, a fair and sustainable marketplace for consumer products, consumer information and disclosure. It deals with issues of unfair marketing and business practices. It also provides for the protection of consumers from hazards to their well-being and safety, like products that are not safe, developing effective means of redress for consumers, and it provides for consumer education and ensuring that the consumers are aware of their rights and they're educated and they are made aware when there are challenges. And to facilitate the freedom for consumers to associate in various forms and ensuring that there's responsible consumer behaviors and the establishment of the Consumer Commission that was brought forward by the Act as well. And in terms of the development currently with the Act, we also did a regulatory impact assessment for the Consumer Protection Act, focusing on certain provisions of the Act to check also how the implementation of the Act has been, whether it was successful and so on. And also, we are currently in the process of reviewing the code. We have the accredited ombuds schemes provided for by the Consumer Protection Act, and we are in the process of providing a review of the motor industry codes and the consumer goods and services codes. And we are currently working internally with the other sector desk that deals with clothing, textile, footwear, and leather master plan to address the labeling issues, clarities around the guidelines on labeling so that when imports arrive and for different labeling of these for clothing, textiles, footwear, there's clarity and to ensure that there's ease of doing business for this sector as far as the Consumer Protection Act is concerned. The National Credit Act, it provides for a fair and accessible credit market, also to ensure that there's the empowerment and ownership within the consumer credit industry. It prohibits certain unfair credit and credit marketing practices, overall to provide for a fair, accessible market for credit in the country. It provides for debt reorganization in cases of over-indebtedness, and then the registrations of various role players from your credit bureaus, credit providers, debt counselors, and it was amended in 2014. And the amendment included the alteration of the governance structure of the National Credit Regulator. It empowered the certain powers were provided for the regulator, including also the registration for the payment distributing agents. So this is just to indicate what it provides for and the amendments, the areas that the amendments are also addressed. So in 2019, in terms of the development, we had the National Credit Amendment Act passed into law. This law was providing for debt relief for the low-income earners who are over-indebted and who are not assisted by any other insolvency type of system. And this law was passed. And following that, as I said, we had a concurrent regulatory impact assessment study that was done in 2019, which was presented to the portfolio committee around the same time when the after along the same times when the Act was passed into law. And we presented this impact study of about the implications of it. And from that time, we were engaging with the industry and the regulators about the implementation. So the issue was that we were aiming for implementation that is not that is cost effective and that will not burden the system, and the implementation that will ensure that low income earners are not disadvantaged, where there are unintended consequences, where they end up going to the informal credit markets because of that. So the consultations led us to a position of looking at reviewing the current act. So we are in the process of looking at how to mitigate the unintended consequences of the act. So it has not yet been implemented, and we are reviewing it based on the discussions we've had with the relevant stakeholders. Of course, it was not everyone, but those that we're engaging with, and looking at the concerns about how cost-effective it was going to be and those unintended consequences. So this is an area that we are still working on to look at how then do we address those challenges. So in summary, this slide is just to showcase the different processes with the legislation that I've presented. So we currently have bills before the National Assembly. These are the remitted bills. This is the Copyright Amendment Bill and the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. We have a bill in mediation in Parliament, that is the National Gambling Amendment Bill. We have a bill, bills that are yet to be introduced to Parliament, the Companies Amendment Bill, the comprehensive one that talks about disclosures of income ownership, and then the one, the new one for the corporate governance. This one is still very new, so it's not at an advanced stage. We're still developing it, so it might take a bit longer. And then there are bills under review. We are currently looking at the National Credit Amendment Act on debt intervention or debt relief, which was a committee bill that was developed by the portfolio committee, but we are reviewing it now based on the consultations and the possible unintended consequences. And then we are looking at the Liquor Amendment Bill because of the magnitude of the issues we identified on liquor abuse in the country and the need for a coordinated approach with other departments. So then from there, Chair, I'll move to the regulatory entities. On the slide, because of time and also knowing that Chair has also pressures of time, I'm going to be a little bit fast. So the next slide, I'm just going to talk to our regulators, and I'm happy that they are here with us in the meeting. It's just to say that our role is integrated with that of the regulators. And we work in close collaboration with Office of the DG, Ms. Nontombi Matomela, section as the acting COO. They do a lot of work of entity oversight. So the governance issues, the appointment issues of the entities, they are the ones who deal with appointments of different heads of entities. They deal with issues that deals with representation of these entities in Parliament and all that. So they are an integral part of this. We come in from the regulatory side. And we have this quarterly regulatory platform where we meet with the entities on a quarterly basis, where they share their priorities, where they are as the entities and their roles and their projects, and we work closely like that. So there is that structure that we have that deals with this process that is led by Ms. Zandile Brown. In terms of I'll start with the National Lotteries Commission. So because I've already presented the regulatory framework around them, some of the things may be like a repetition, but they are our regulator that then implements, regulates the policy and the norms and the issues that are in the legislation. They enforce, they regulate, then they also implement. So they are responsible for those functions. They, for example, regulating the national lotteries, sports pools, as well as other lotteries. And also, they advise the minister on trade and other on policy matters related to the national lottery sports pools and other lotteries. They are the trustee of the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund and overseeing the proceeds for good cause funding. They provide administrative support to the distributing agencies. that adjudicates the applications for funding. And these are the distributing agencies are appointed by the minister. And the National Gambling Board is the one that deals with issues of gambling. So the regulatory framework of gambling, they deal with the enforcement and the actual regulation of the national gambling. So part of their functions include oversight of gambling in the Republic of South Africa by evaluating the compliance monitoring of licenses by the provincial licensing authorities. They assist the licensing authorities to ensure that the unlicensed gambling activities are detected. They monitor market conduct and market share. They monitor the socioeconomic patterns of gambling activity and research in order to identify patterns of the socioeconomic impacts of gambling and addictive or compulsive gambling in the country. They establish and maintain a national registry of every gambling machine or gambling device manufactured into the Republic, as well as maintaining all other legislative prescribed registers. They do investigative work in the circumstances of any gambling activity that relates to unlawful winnings that are held in trust. And they also advise the National Gambling Policy Council on matters of national policy and legislative changes relating to gambling. So they do a lot of work with provinces, and they are our enforcement entity that ensures that we do our part when it comes to gambling-related issues. Then we have the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission. The CIPC, it registers companies, cooperatives, and also IP in terms of trademarks, patents, designs, and copyright, and maintenance thereof. They also, so in terms of registration, they do this work. In terms of copyright, not so much, I must say, but for the other types of IP, yes, especially your patents and your designs. And then the disclosure of information on its business registers. They also have education and awareness in terms of their mandate. And they promote compliance with their legislation, And they do enforcement of the legislation, and they deal with issues of monitoring compliance with the contravention of financial reporting standards, and ensuring that the recommendations on financial reporting standards are addressed. And they license business rescue practitioners, and then they do other functions like report research. And all the things that I'm saying does not express the totality of what they do, it's just to give a sense of their mandate. And I'm speaking like that for all the other entities as well. And then we have the Companies Tribunal. The tribunal's mandate is the adjudication in relation to any application that may be made to it in terms of the Companies Act, and to make any order provided for in the Companies Act in respect of such an application. They assist in the resolution of disputes as contemplated in the Act. And they perform any other function assigned to it by or in terms of the Act. And they also assist to reduce compliance regulatory costs. They provide redress and quick and easy access to stakeholders, particularly small businesses. And they provide mediation where it's required or where it is deemed necessary. Then we have the Takeover Regulation Panel. The Takeover Regulation Panel, we listed as one of our entities. However, it's not a listed entity. It's established in terms of the Companies Act. It regulates affected transactions or offers set in the Act. And for the regulated companies, it investigates complaints related to affected transactions and offers. They also assist to apply to court for an order to wind up a company in certain circumstances. They also consult with the minister in respect of additions, amendments, or deletions to the takeover regulations. And they may consult with any person with a view of advising that person on the application of the Act and the takeover regulations. They may issue, amend, or withdraw information on current policy dealing with an affected transaction or offer for guidance. They may receive and deal with any representation by parties on any matter in respect of affected transactions. And they deal with issues of broadly with minority shareholders. They deal with issues of minority shareholders. Then I'll move to the consumer-related entities. I'll start with the Consumer Commission, National Consumer Commission, which promotes a fair, accessible, and sustainable marketplace for consumer products and services, and also they establish norms and standards for consumer protection. They provide for improved standards of consumer information. They prohibit certain unfair marketing and business practices, promote responsible consumer behavior, and also they promote a consistent legislation and enforcement framework relating to consumer transactions. The National Consumer Tribunal, in terms of its mandate, it derives its mandate from the National Credit Act. Its mandate was also extended to the National Consumer Commission to look at, so it takes applications made in terms of the National Credit Act or the Consumer Protection Act that are made by consumers, credit providers, credit bureau, debt counselors, the National Credit Regulator, and the National Consumer Commission. They deal with applications for interim relief and review decisions by the National Credit Regulator and the National Consumer Commission. So the matters that are referred to the tribunal by both regulators are regarding complaints related to allegations or prohibited conduct. They also deal with those. And they deal with applications for debt rearrangement agreements be made in order of the tribunal in terms of the act, and also the Consumer of the Credit Act and the Consumer Protection Act. So they are an overall independent adjudicative entity. They hear and decide on cases involving consumers, suppliers of goods and services, and other role players that are in both legislation. So they hear these applications and cases. So they are our adjudicative entity that deals with issues from the consumer market and the credit market. The National Credit Regulator provides for the general regulation of consumer credit and improves standards of consumer information. They promote a fair and non-discriminatory market, a place for access of consumer credit. They promote Black economic empowerment and ownership within the consumer credit industry. They prohibit certain unfair credit and credit marketing practices. They promote responsible credit granting and use, and for that purpose to prohibit reckless credit granting. They provide for debt organization reorganization in case of over-indebtedness. They regulate the credit information. They provide for registration of credit bureaus, credit providers, and debt counseling services. And they also establish norms and standards relating to consumer credit and promote consistent enforcement framework relating to consumer credit. So this is the landscape for the National Credit Regulator in terms of the different bodies they work with and their registrants, from credit providers, credit bureaus, alternative dispute resolution agents, debt counselors, payment distributing agencies, and also their work with the National Consumer Tribunal. All of them in general, apart from the adjudicative type of regulators, they do enforcement, education and awareness type of work, compliance related, they do cooperative government type of work with other bodies and other regulators, international related obligations, and helping us with developing policies and identifying where there are implementation issues when it comes to the implementation of their legislation. So they form a very important part of the role of the Department of Trade and Industry on the consumer and corporate regulation work. Then I'm going to come to the last part of the presentation on the statutory committees reporting to the branch. We have the Patent Examination Board. It's a board, but we call it we group it in this category, given the fact that we administer it directly. This is the one that is created in terms of the Patents Act for overseeing the patent examination administered in terms of the Act. Then we have the Specialist Committee on Company Law established in terms of the Companies Act. It advises Minister on company law and policy matters. We have the Financial Reporting Standard Council that deals with established in terms of the Companies Act. It advises ministers on matters related to financial reporting standards. Then we have the Standing Advisory Committee on Intellectual Property, SACIP. It is established in terms of the Copyright Act. It advises the minister on intellectual property law and policy matters. We have the National Liquor Policy Council, established in terms of the Liquor Act. It is a statutory forum to discuss policy issues in relation to liquor regulation between provinces and national, headed by the minister and with the provincial MECs responsible for those areas. The National Gambling Policy Council, established in terms of the National Gambling Act. It's a statutory forum to discuss policy issues in relation to gambling, also as a concurrent competency. So in terms of the Financial Reporting Standard Council, we are currently undertaking the recruitment process to ensure that there's a statutory, this council is in place. And its functions includes to receive and consider any relevant information related to the reliability and compliance with financial reporting standards and adopting international reporting standards for local circumstances and considering information from the Commission as contemplated in the Act. They advise the Minister on matters related to financial reporting and they consult the Minister on the making of regulations establishing financial reporting standards. The reason why I singled it out from the others is because there has been some issues raised around its establishment or whether it's in place or not. So the department is working on the establishment of this council at this present moment. So Chair, this was the in terms of the main work, that's the main work of the branch. On this slide is just to add some of the other projects that we do. Like the regulatory impact assessments, because of the intellectual property mandate, we will be having the ratification of the treaties. These are not projects for this year, but just to indicate, we will be the ones that will be working around finalizing of that process once the parliamentary processes are undertaken and completed with the bills, especially the copyright and performance protection, and this will be then taken forward for ascension or ratification in WIPO. And then we do education and awareness on an ongoing basis, and our work involves a lot of litigation and complaints from the public, and we will be overseeing a lot of work on red tape reduction to ensure that we align with the president's mandate to ensure that we ease the doing of business in South Africa. So we will be working a lot on this. And on this slide is just examples of some of the education awareness processes we've had in the previous financial year. I will not go into them. They're on the slides just to show the kind of work we have been doing. We have been affected significantly by COVID-19. We used to do a lot of education awareness in rural communities and provinces on a regular basis. And this slide has been presented before. It's our work for the financial year in terms of the APP commitments. Some of the areas I've highlighted in the legislative developments are captured here. For example, the Companies Amendment Bill that will be going to Cabinet, the Companies Amendment Bill on the worker participation, the National Credit Act Amendment Act for the review of the Act, the mediation process for the gambling amendment, and then the other types of projects related to red tape reduction. So we'll be working around this key project. This slide is just to indicate the budget allocation for the branch and then the allocations to our entities. The bulk of our project, of our budget goes to the transfers to entities. So for this financial year, we have 350 million rand, 879,000. That is the budget for the branch, but then it's divided to the entities, shared with the entities, transferred for their mandates. So this is just to indicate how we are, how the budget is allocated between us and the regulatory entities. And we also subscribe to the World Intellectual Property Organization, so we pay a fee for our role there. And So this is the last slide, Chair. Just to thank you and the honourable members for the opportunity to present to you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. The chairperson is about to leave for another meeting, so he will sit in for a while, but we'll excuse him as he has to leave. Mr. Khan, have you got any views that you want to state before we go on to questions?
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered. I think the presentation was quite a detailed presentation, so we're happy to take any questions or comments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. It's quite a long list of entities that is administered by the department. Please let us bear time and take time into account. We have a plenary later this afternoon. Thank you. Can I get hands for questions? Can you raise your hands for questions? I see no hands for questions.
I have raised one, mine, Chair.
Honorable Dongor, you also need to, I don't know if you, anyway, you can look at the participants and see where the hands are raised.
Well, I see Jack O'Lont now. So, Honorable Mwemang and Honorable Lont, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Just quickly, two things. The one that I'm worried about throughout this presentation is the presenters portrayed a very rosy picture, but I'm going to highlight one thing that was an issue. The National Gambling Amendment Bill, it came to the NCOP, came to the committee. There was reservations across party political lines from different provinces sent back, and it seems like there was a type of arrogance to just take that exact same thing and try and bring it to us again and sell the same thing that was rejected. And I said at the time, it is a very positive thing that parties and provinces across the board did what is right for that respective province, and it bodes well for the future of what we're doing in the NCOP, and it's going to become more interesting if politics changes after 2024. But it's a concern that when it's portrayed here, that there's no introspection at all, that valid comments and criticisms from members were not taken on board, were not taken back, were not considered and implemented, and then brought back to us. And that is why the thing ended up at the mediation. No other reason. It was a complete and utter arrogance and disregard from whoever worked with this toward what provinces said and the members said. The same when it comes to the National Lotteries Commission. Such a rosy picture was painted, but nothing was said about the problems that beset that commission and what are you doing to address that. And it doesn't help you come here and just try and paint a rosy picture and you're not honest with what the challenges are and how you're addressing that. That's for now, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mwemang. Honorable Mwemang. Honorable Mwemang, can you hear me? If not, can we take any other questions?
No, I can hear you, Honorable Dango. It was this gadget.
Sorry.
It's giving me flames this morning.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Please, Mr. Honorable Mwemang.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The question that I want to pose relates to the issues that the department agreed in 2019 to look into So the question will be how far it has performed. The first one relates to the National Lotteries Commission. They agreed to conduct impact assessment on the implementation of the Lotteries Act to ensure that the NLC, according to governance, functions according to governance requirements and mindful of the issues that has been in the media. It will be important just to get a sense in terms of what mechanisms were put in place to begin to close those gaps. Honorable Lord, the National Gambling Amendment Bill, but of course, we are mindful of the fact that it is at the stage of mediation, so I won't go into that. And then on the amendment to the liquor regulations of 2013, there was an issue around implementation of the approved policy review by finalizing the legislative amendments process through the amendments of the Liquor Act to ensure that we enhance capacity of the National Liquor Authority to be more efficient as it moves towards automation and to strengthen the role and impact of the National Liquor Policy Council. How far are we with regard to that? The second one relates to the amendment to the Companies Act 2008, which was to align the Act with international corporate trends, further to conduct impact assessment. How far are we with regard to that? Then the last one is a huge challenge is to drive education and capacity building on a regulatory governance framework to communities, including rural communities, particularly to SMEs and cooperatives, including corporate governance training targeting women, youth, and persons with disabilities. How far are we with that? And how are we going to create a balancing act to protect consumers and making doing business simpler while protecting the consumers? And then lastly, from a consumer and corporate regulatory perspective, what is the take of the department on the current issued investment strategy by the presidency? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I have two questions. The one question is how accessible is the national credit regulator to the public? Is it through the provinces? Please indicate how accessible that is. Two is the question of debt collectors. Is there any intent to regulate this particular industry? Because it seems to be a law unto itself when they're dealing with the public. And three is the question of micro lenders. Is there any intent to regulate the kind of usurious interest that they are charging? Over to you, DG, or Ms. Masoja, who's going to answer the questions? It's up to you, please. Ms. Masoja, please. Please proceed, Ms. Masoja.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the honorable members' questions. Chair, I'll start with, first of all, thank you for all the questions. And to start with the first question by, I think it's Honorable Jaco Lund. I want to express something here. The presentation, as you can see, is quite comprehensive. We focus on our mandate, and in terms of we had to come and say, what does the program five, what does it entail? What is it focusing on, and the different areas? So the developments that were added in the slide, the intention was not to paint a rosy picture. It was just to indicate where the different processes are. If honorable member wants to have a maybe for the department to indicate what were the challenges, the fact that it is in mediation indicates that there were concerns, and even the voting that took place and the disagreements by the provinces, we do acknowledge that. It's just that the focus was more on who we are and what we do. So maybe it's something that we could have strengthened to highlight the different challenges that were discussed. So by approaching the presentation in this manner, it was not to try to paint the picture of everything is fine. We are in mediation. So it does say that there is a challenge and there are issues that were raised. Hence the bill was dealt with in this manner. So I just thought I should just clarify that. It was not to ignore the issues. And so the and also in terms of the role of the NLC, we presented them in terms of they are one of our entities and their functions and the roles. And if there are questions that are specific to the concerns about the NLC, that can be asked the department to speak to. So that was the approach. But I note the concerns that were raised, and it's something that maybe we will look at differently in future to also flag some of those issues. The focus was just different. We're focusing on it in a different way. But if that is, it created an impression, it was not the intention to come across as that there's no problems, there are no issues. We're just trying to say this is who we are for now. And then in terms of Honorable Mwemang's the questions around the Lotteries Act and the implementation of the issues around governance and the regulatory impact assessment. The regulatory impact assessment was conducted on the National Lottery, on the lotteries. We have an impact assessment that we are planning to take forward in terms of the policy process and to develop a regulatory, to come up with a new legislation addressing some of the concerns that were identified in the implementation of the National Lottery since it was amended in 2013. There have been challenges identified with the distributing agencies, the structure of the distributing agencies, and other challenges in terms of enforcement and other governance related questions. So we are going to be looking into that. In terms of the media mechanisms, that is a question that I would request that maybe we maybe I'll check with the colleagues from the NLC if they can speak to that. But from the department side, I would request that maybe on this one, we maybe write to the committee to come back on it to check, because it's something that probably will be in a wider departmental process than necessarily in the consumer and corporate regulation space. From our branch side, we don't have any media mechanisms that we have come up with as a branch, but we can do a coordination around this separately. It's something that we can look into. The National Gambling Amendment Bill, I've noted Mr. Mwemang's comment, and it's true that it is indeed it is in the mediation. There were challenges raised about it. There were concerns that provinces raised. I'll talk, and for an example, the issue around the National Gambling Policy Council, where we were talking about if in a number of meetings there's no quorum, those who are available in the next meeting can make a decision. Some of the provinces were not okay with that approach to say that it can be, a decision can be taken without other MECs, even though they're not available mostly for meetings, or even though there are planned meetings, some of them will not show up on the day of the meeting or cancel in the morning of the meeting. So it's one of the areas that was a contentious issue. And also the extension of the National Central Monitoring System was another issue that was raised to say it should not be at the national level. Provinces have a role to play in that regard. And so, and extending it to other modes and giving those authority to the National Gambling Regulator, I mean the regulator. Another one was a new regulator instead of a board. Provinces were saying you can't have one individual being a regulator overseeing provinces instead of having a fully fledged board. So these are some of the issues that affected the bill and to where it is now in the mediation process, because provinces had different views about those provisions. And in terms of the implementation of the finalization of the Liquor Amendment Bill, Honorable Mwerang is correct. The bill was supposed to be finalized and tabled. However, as I have indicated, we are currently reviewing it as a department because we were mindful of the fact that although we have a bill that was ready, it didn't, when we looked at the magnitude of the societal challenges of alcohol abuse and binge drinking in the country, we were of the view that there is a need for an engagement further on the bill to see how we can strengthen it. So that's why it has not moved to where it could be in Parliament deliberated on to be passed into law. Our worry was that we're going to have a bill and then maybe following that, you don't have an impact. You have provisions, but there's no fully fleshed impact. Hence, now we are engaging with other relevant departments and also looking at how we can strengthen the bill. The issue of the NLA is noted as well in terms of how Honourable Member has seen it in terms of improving its efficiencies and the issues around its automation and so on. But there is work the NLA is currently doing around automation, improving its systems and ensuring that there's simplicity and efficiency in addressing the applications for the registrants. And it's an area that we are looking closely at as a branch. The National Liquor Policy Council, there were provisions we were looking at in the a draft amendment bill also to strengthen the way it works. The Policy Council has similar challenges with the National Gambling Policy Council of the quorum and decision making, because even when norms and standards are set or other issues need to be discussed, we would not normally have all the relevant decision makers in one room. It affected its effectiveness. So part of the amendment was to look at the governance of that. And then the company's amendment bill process is underway. The plan is to have it being considered by cabinet and hopefully also having it introduced into parliament. So that is underway. There is work that is being done on the company's amendment bill. And also we did develop a regulatory impact assessment on the company's amendment bill, looking at certain provisions of the act to try to identify the challenges and policy options to enforce to inform the next legislative process, the broader review of the act. So this is one part of the amendment, but then we also anticipate a bigger review of the act, and that's where the impact assessment is going to come in strongly to assist us with that process. And then the education and awareness, we agree that it's very important, especially in provinces. And we have been very active in the past in terms of the education awareness with our entities coming with us into the rural communities. That is the work that we will be continuing with going forward to ensure that there is that support of education awareness on our legislative tools, on the work of the entities going forward. And on the investment strategy of the president, I think on this one, I'm not sure, but it's something that as well, we can look at and maybe respond in writing to the committee. We'll have to look at that. But from our side at the moment, we are supporting the work of the presidency on red tape reduction. And we will be doing this other project from our side to look at how our legislation and regulations affect investment. But as far as the work that is being dealt with by the presidency directly, if there's a particular investment strategy program, I'm not aware of that for now, but we are working on red tape reduction as the branch, and we are going to be looking at other work we do that may impact or hinder investment based on the constraints in our legislation and in our regulation. So on the debt collectors, the regulation of debt collectors, Honorable Dango, that is the work of the Department of Justice, Constitutional Development. They are the ones that look at issues of debt collection. It's not in our mandate as a DTIC. So maybe this is an area that the Department of Justice can assist with that in terms of clarity. So our framework does not talk to debt collection per se. So it's something that is in the mandate of the other Department of Justice. And the issue of micro-lending, we've had some discussions around that in terms of the regulation of micro-lenders. But I think maybe the NCR can maybe give a view around that in terms of their perspective on this area, and also the issue of the role of the NCR in the provinces, how accessible they are in the provinces. So if through you, Chair, I would request that my colleagues from the NCR, Ms. Thupang Maholego, if she can talk to the issue of the accessibility of the NCR to the provinces, and possibly, if she can, on the issue of micro-lending, through you, Chair. Thanks.
Can she please go forward? What is her name again?
Thupang Maholego.
Ms. Can she please proceed? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, DDG. For the record, my name is Nchupang Maholego. I'm the Senior Legal Advisor for the NCR. In terms of regulating the interest that microlenders charge to consumers, when you look at the National Credit Act, the National Credit Act actually has prescribed the maximum fees, including interest, that all credit providers must charge consumers. So the issue is currently regulated in terms of the Act. So any microlender that is charging consumers usurious interest rate is actually breaking the law, which then means that the NCR must continue to strengthen its enforcement activities to ensure that any microlender that is charging consumers outside of the law is brought to book, and redress is given to consumers. So the issue of excessive interest is actually a part of the law, and it is regulated in terms of the National Credit Act. As far as the question of accessibility of the National Credit Regulator, indeed, the National Credit Regulator currently, the only office that it has is the one in Midrand, Gauteng. But how we try to address the issue of accessibility is that we work with various provincial consumer protection bodies that becomes our access offices for the various provinces where consumers are not able to come to the head office in Gauteng in order to raise their concerns regarding maybe issues of non-compliance with the National Credit Act. So in order to try and resolve the issue of accessibility, we've partnered with various consumer protection bodies in the provinces so that they can become our access offices for purposes of accessibility for our consumers. Thank you.
Thank you. Mahdia, did I miss anybody other than Honorable Moimang and Honorable Lont in the question session? Kindly advise me, I may have missed anybody.
from what I can see, no, Mr. Dango. No.
Thank you very much then. Let me then thank DG. Is there any remarks that you want to make in conclusion, acting DG? Apologies.
Thank you, Ambassador Dango. Chair, just two points that I'd just like to maybe just respond to. I think the first one around the investment strategy. Chair, we do have a branch that deals primarily with the investment mandate of the department. That branch is Program 8, which is called Invest SA. And the key focus of that branch is around the ease of doing business and improving the investment climate. And that is predominantly how they actually support the presidential investment work and also the target of 1.3 trillion rand in terms of the investment target. And here there is a work program that the branch works with the World Bank in terms of the ease of doing business. And here the focus is on improving the regulatory processes. Within the last few years, the colleagues have worked quite closely with CIPC, one of the agencies reporting into this branch, around improving the time in which a company is registered. Similarly, there's a lot of work with the provinces as well as the municipalities around water permits, water licenses. So this is continuous work between the department and a number of the different stakeholders within the state. But here the core focus is to ensure that we do have an investment climate that attracts investment. Okay, just in terms of, and it's just a broad response to one of the questions around the National Lotteries Commission. And Chair, one of the key things which we focused quite strongly in this coming financial year in terms of our annual performance plan, it's around the area of improving the governance as well as the as also driving what we do call an important objective of building a capable state. And within this annual performance plan this year, Chair, we would be also launching an anti-corruption unit. And here, literally, it's to take some of the lessons that we learned out of some of the investigations done by the SAU, as well as other investigations, and to see how we can, in future, proactively deal with that. So that's something that the Minister has put into our annual performance plan. And that's something we would deal with quite decisively going forward. Chair, on that note, Chair, I'd just like to maybe then thank you and the committee for the questions. Chair, I am aware that we haven't at this stage made a detailed presentation on our annual performance plan for the department, but I'm sure at some point we would be able to come back to the committee and really take you through our annual performance plan for the coming year. So with that note, Chair, I'd like to then conclude and thank you and the honourable colleagues for their comments and questions. Thank you so much.
Let me thank the department. Let me thank the DG. Let me thank Ms. Masoja and the entities that have attended. Let me thank members that have attended. Let me thank the staff for that have attended and facilitated this meeting. Thank you very much. This meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Now we leave the chair.